JG 1. Number 14A.
Okay, I want to say, you know, this is the gains of equivocal space that we do this in our consciousness. This is why on the level of absolute Christian science, one thing can be seen from different sides. And again, it's the one thing, but again, the people are arguing about it. With the young woman and old woman, we could say, well, the young woman is real and the old woman is unreal, because Mrs. Eddy says that old age is a belief that or a disease that must be overcome. So, as we'll say here, I think it's still the best example then. What is real is the young, the always new, and what is unreal is the old. Though Aristotle would say they both are real, that there is a young standpoint that is a real value, and there is an old standpoint is the real value, and they're both valid. But as I just said, that Mrs. Eddy says, no, there is only the young, the new, the always progressing of absolute Christian science. See, it works with the calculus of ideas, and those calculus of ideas are constantly restructuring themselves. And when they constantly restructure them like a kaleidoscope, it's always bringing out something new, isn't it? So it's real, she would say. And as I said, the old woman is unreal. And that's what I love about Mrs. Eddy when she said, old age is a disease to be overcome. How many of us believe that old age is a disease to be overcome? I don't find anyone in practice when I'm working with them that really believe that and know from the standpoint of absolute Christian science, from the dual conceptual logic, that it's to be overcome. Everyone in practice that I work with believes in the Aristotelian logic. Oh, well, they're 90, they're 110, and it's time for them to go on now. I mean, you know, at 150, they've lived a long life, so it's right. No. At 90 years old, that's young. It's always young. There is no time, there's no space, there's no age. We have got to stop thinking in time periods, in the periods of age. That's the 7,000 year period. There are no times periods, there's no space periods, there's no birth, maturity, death, there is none of that. And we buy into it every minute. And they say, oh, well, I'm getting this old, so therefore I'm losing my memory, I'm losing my walking ability, I can't hear, I can't see, I can't do that. But that's, you know, that's old age. And how many of all of us as Christian Science do that? Or as we say, oh, well, they, you know, they lived a good life, bye-bye. You know, or they were suffering, so it's good they went on. Where the tree falleth, there it shall lie. What's so good about them going on? They still have the same form they had here. Mrs. Eddy says that death isn't a friend or an enemy. It's something to be overcome. We really don't understand the logic of Christian Science, and I can speak from experience because of being in the practice of it. So, if we had that logic of Christian Science always in our mind, we would never experience the sagging of the face because of gravity pulling it down. When we see that gravity works for us, it's adhesion, cohesion, and attraction, that's the buoyancy force that holds us up, and Jesus walked on the water. We would never suffer the cycle of birth, maturity, and death, none of this. This is practical logic of absolute Christian Science. Isn't it wonderful? That's why she said at this point of absolute Christian Science, there would be the cessation of death, sorrow, and pain. Therefore, what we see over and over, I say this is in black on white, we can't say, I know that logic, let's go on, I've already read about it. After all, I read logical reasoning in Christian Science. Well, goody, goody. That's getting the exact letter, huh? But do we know it and experience every day? That's what this class is about. I'm not here to expound things that are new. I'm here to bring the Spirit to what we already know. That's the Christ. I don't want to be a John the Baptist that goes and always tells us the letter. I'm much more interested in the Christ. Can I help with the spirit of the thing? At home during the year, I think, oh, these people are reading these books. They're reading what's in the world. They know these things. They're reading Max's books. They're studying all this. I said, I think my mission is to come and help with the spirit of it, to bring the Christ to it, to make it feel warm and alive, to add the flesh and the blood, to encourage that aspect of the subject. Huh? Anybody can read it. So here, on the level of absolute Christian Science, can we honestly say that we don't go outside the focal point of spirit? So everything is turned upside down all the time. If we do, good, but I doubt if we'd still be here. We'd probably ascend. Because Jesus did, and John Dorley, to the woman who, remember she came up and said, to him, well, I really understand everything you say, but I have this problem with corns. And John Dorley said, good, I'm glad you do, because I like you and I want you to stay with us. I don't want you to go on. So, therefore, we see that if all of us were perfect, we wouldn't appear to this dimension that is handling imperfection. So this is that standpoint then of absolute Christian Science, where on the level of Christian Science, we are outside handling that which is outside the focal point of spirit, called the calculus of illusions, with the two-valued logic that only the calculus of ideas are real and the calculus of illusions are unreal, handling them as being unreal from the logic of absolute Christian Science. But on the level of Christian Science, it's handling that which goes outside the focal point of spirit, where she says that outside the focal point of spirit, delusion, sin, disease, and death arise from the false testimony of the material sense, which from a supposed standpoint outside the focal distance of infinite spirit presents an inverted image of mind and substance with everything turned upside down. So, at the focal point of spirit, she says, that's where the rays of truth are gathered together into the focus of light and bring light instantaneously. On the level of absolute Christian Science, we stay focused at the focal point of spirit, at the focal point of the calculus of reality, at the focal point of the calculus of real values. And we're only demonstrating absolute real values. We're only demonstrating the young woman, the young man, so to speak. And we see then from the focal point of spirit, if we went out from that focal point of spirit and looked to the right or to the left and let the suggestion that something else is going on besides God happen, and happened to see the old woman, happened to believe in old age, in death, that takes us to the level of Christian Science, and Christian Science would handle that through the calculus of ideas. That's why the level of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science have one line. Because Mrs. Eddy said, Christian Science is always absolute. We never leave the standpoint of the calculus of ideas. The calculus of ideas is always at work. Christian Science is always absolute. That Christian Science level is only there to show how the calculus of ideas of absolute Christian Science handles the calculus of beliefs. But it's still the calculus of ideas on the Christian Science level, handling the calculus of illusion. So on absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, we never leave the calculus of ideas. But one is on the level of absolute Christian science, the calculus of ideas never leaves the focal point of spirit, and we see only the calculus of ideas, so we're always solving positive problems with it. The preventative art, as we'll see. We never yield our focus. Therefore, we will experience the cessation of death, sorrow, and pain, because we never see the old woman. But as I say, if we do, then that's when the level of absolute Christian science has its impact on Christian science, and when the calculus of ideas then systematically resolves the calculus of illusions. Do we see? So it's the dual conceptual logic that we're interested in Christian science, not the two valued. And so Christian science is only dual, two conceptual. It's not a two valued logic. Mrs. Eddy didn't use it.
Jill,
all right, yes.
The reason it's called the focal point of spirit is that because of the differentiation of spirit, is that why we use that designation?
The question, Jim, is at the focal point of spirit. Your question is?
Why do we use spirit as opposed to mind?
Oh, yes, good. He says, why did Mrs. Eddy call it the focal point of spirit? Try to reason it out, Jim. What does spirit as a synonymous term stand for?
Well, I was wondering.
As a positive value.
Well, I was wondering if it was the order of the differentiation.
Well, no, that doesn't quite help. What does spirit handle as that's unique to spirit? Mind says that I'm that divine mind. I'm that all creative mind. I create everything. And spirit says, Chris?
Onlyness.
See?
So it handles dualism.
It handles dualism. Spirit is the one valued logic that handles dualism. And so when Mrs. Eddy always uses a synonymous term precisely, her language was so precise. She wasn't interested in the fact that it's a focal point of mind, because mind will talk to us about the law of causation, that it creates all, produces all. Soul is talking about the translation and retranslation going on, principle about the self-organizing system, life about its system of life, truth, and love. It's unique to spirit to talk about that onlyness of being. So when she's handling the belief of duality, or the two-valued logic on the Christian science level, she'll handle it with the right synonymous term, which is spirit. And spirit says, oh, mind, you're the only reality. And now I handle duality. Because you're the only, I'm going to handle the belief that there's two-ness. There is only the one. You see? That's why she chose spirit. And at any time you wonder why she's used a synonymous term in a specific place, always look for the problem that she's solving. Because her textbook is a textbook of problem solving. It's a textbook of absolute Christian science, impact on Christian science. So her textbook presents these two valued logic problems of Christian science, like where spirit versus matter, that's what Aristotle was dealing with. Plato said it's ideational, and Democritus says no, it's of matter. Aristotle comes along and said, and those are two values. And Mrs. Eddy is always solving like the spirit-matter problem. And when she does that, she will solve it with the power of spirit over matter, huh? So she's solving these paradoxes. Or she's working with body, she would say the power of soul over the body. Because it's always the logic of absolute Christian science resolving the two-valued logic. Her book is not a book of divine science. Though Max wrote the book, The Oneness in the Science of the Textbook, to show the divine science level behind the textbook, her textbook is a phenomena of the 6,000-year period, which is the period of truth, which is a period of absolute Christian science, look backing at the 5,000-year period of Christian science. You see? So it's always resolving duality. That's very important to remember in our analysis of the textbook. It's terrific, terrific level, isn't it? All right. Then we go on to the next level, the level of divine science. And what would we say would be the logic of the level of divine science? We've already mentioned it, and I said, well, you're hearing a higher logic. What to name it so we can actually say and give it a name, it would be the one-valued logic, as you said. So on that level of divine science, we have the one-valued logic. Now, what... But Max Kapler also brings out in his book, The Logical Reasoning of Christian Science, that on that level of divine science, that one-valued logic is a seven-value. Why does he talk about a seven-value there on the level of divine science?
Well, the one value is God.
Yeah, the one value is God, right, because the synonymy principle, the one value always refers to God.
We have the seven synonyms in order to help us understand that God.
Right. Dave said that, quite rightly, that one valued logic, which is really also the science itself level, is a one-valued logic. It's that infinite one, as we'll look as we go up. But on divine science, how to differentiate that infinite logic, which is a one-valued logic of science itself, from the level of divine science? And as Dave so rightly said, that, well, when you take that infinite one light, that infinite logic of science itself, and that's what the logic of science itself is called, the infinite logic, the one, and you see it as seven values operating simultaneously. How, Dave, how do those values operate on divine science? So I'll show the law of that level in a bit. It's operating according to four, isn't it? Always.
Yeah.
Mind is always operating out of itself, through itself, as itself, and for the glory of itself. Spirit is always operating out of itself, through itself, as itself, and for the glory of itself. So on that one-valued logic of divine science, there are seven distinct divine values, always operating out of themselves, through themselves, as themselves, and for themselves, yet still remaining the one value. Very important to know, because those seven are very important on the level of divine science. And then on the level of science itself, what then is the name of the logic? Max says in his booklet on logical reasoning, it's called an infinite logic. Yes, it's still the infinite logic of the one-valued logic, but it has a different law behind it, as we will see. It's a law, really, of the seven, blending with the seven, not out of themselves, through themselves, as themselves, and for themselves. That's a fourfold operation. But on the level of science itself, there is the infinite logic of the infinite one, and that is in a logic of what we would call then the matrix of infinity. That is the law then of infinity, where I just have this particular in the study aid on page 33, we really have that form of what's going on the level of science itself. That what is happening in the infinite logic of science, and as I said, I'll take the law of this level when we discuss the tonality of the level, but that is an infinite logic which we could say really is not something that is static. It's the infinite one, yes, But a one isn't necessarily static. It's infinite. And when we go through the different tones of the levels word-wise, we'll see that infinite is something that never repeats itself. It's infinite in... we'll talk about it. But anyhow, it's not static. And it's infinitely ever new. Because why? It's constantly restructuring itself through its inner reflections. So we see then that on the level of science itself, we're only dealing with the value of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Only with the infinite one, I am, which is infinitely being. The I, the one ego, is emming. M, A-M, in the I am. The A-M is a verb. The I am. It's the I is emming. It's verbing. It's infinitely being. So therefore, it has motion to it. And therefore, on that level, it's the I am, which is infinitely being, is that I am, which is infinitely being. And therefore, on this level, mind is being its own infinite mind. We're only dealing with the pure value of God itself, reflecting God. We're on the level of divine science in that one-valued logic, which is a seven-valued logic. That is that one God operating as out of itself, through itself, as itself, and for itself, according to the law of self-organization. We'll see that. I'll go through that again, but it's just to build it up. So on the level of science itself, we're only dealing with the value of the one. But that one is God. Well, we know what God is. It's mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And that is knowing itself. So mind is being its own infinite mind. Spirit is being its own infinite spirit. Soul is being its own infinite soul. Principle is being its own infinite principle. Life is being its own infinite life. Truth is being its own infinite truth. Love is being its own infinite love. And it never leaves the realm of the I, the one. Emming. That's that infinite logic. And it's infinite through its, we could say, its intra-reflection. So we have then the various logics on the level. So we've seen now that infinite logic of science itself appearing as the infinite I am, being its own infinite I am, just staying within that. And that's the goal. That's irrational. We'll see that when we take the tones of the levels here, that is a self-contained point. And that infinite logic on divine science now, that infinite one becomes a one-valued logic. We see now that it's seven-valued. And that one-valued logic still is the same one-valued logic, but on a level takes on different forms. You see? It's the one-valued logic taking on many forms as it goes down the levels, yet still remains a one-valued logic. That's dimensionalism. So the one-valued logic on the science level is the infinite logic. The one-valued logic on... did I say divine science?
No, you said science.
Thank you. The one-valued logic on science itself is the infinite logic. That's the form it takes. The one-valued logic on divine science is the form it takes as a seven-value when it changes its level and takes on the phenomena of that level. The one-valued logic appears on the level of absolute Christian science to handle its phenomenon as a dual conceptual logic, which never leaves the standpoint of the dual conceptual logic in Christian science, and on the level of Christian science handles the two-valued logic. It always remains the one-valued logic. Do you see? Isn't it beautiful? That's the logic of Christian science. And that's why it handles these paradoxes. And that's if we could talk to the world dimensionally, with the transclassical logic, as which Mrs. Eddy put in the textbook, we would handle any paradox where somebody says, well, in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy says God heals disease, and on another standpoint, she says God knows no disease. We can now answer that, can't we? Because we say she was a transclassical scientist. She used a transclassical logic. Now, therefore, as we see then on those laws, on page 78 in the study aid, there are laws governing the logic of each of these levels. The laws governing the multitude of phenomenon on each level. Therefore, on the level of science itself, we would say that it's law as such.
Page 78?
Page 78 in the study aid.
78?
So I have added to it. Perhaps you won't see everything on page 78 that I say, but it's an embellishment. Okay, Ellen was wondering that she didn't see it all on that page. So therefore, the level of science itself is law itself, because why? Why would we say that it's law itself, not just to take it as? Because what appears on that level? God. And how did Mrs. Eddy define God?
All in all.
No, all in all is the tonality of the divine science level. This is wonderful. One says that as the all in all, and right away we say no, that that's the standpoint of divine science. This level of science itself, we will see when we go through tonality, is the all, capital all. And therefore, we said that, and then Dick said through the seven synonymous terms, which is a good answer, because we just were talking about that God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But Dick, what did she do with all those capitalized terms? What did she include them under when she says, and it includes them all?
Principle.
So on that level, we have principle. And the definition of principle is that fundamental law which includes all other laws. Principle is law as such. And now it will include all the other laws.